Allison inspires me in so many ways. She works an amazing program. She's just a fantastic human being, and it's just been an honor to get to know her and consider her one of my dearest friends. And I absolutely am thrilled and honored to introduce Allison.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
15 years ago, I attended a speaker meeting at my original home group in Gwinnett County. The name of it is Easy Does It. And one of my favorite old-timers had shared with the group a prayer that he said every day, multiple times a day, whenever he was angry, sad, anxious, just overall discontentment. And so this is my first time sharing my story. I'm really nervous, a little anxious, so I wanted to begin with that prayer and then kind of move into my story. So, God, please help. My name is Allison. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
everyone. I figured I'd go ahead and start my story at the beginning, if that makes sense. I grew up the youngest of six children in Jamaica, Queens, New York. Hey, 11417, come on. I have three older brothers and two older sisters. I grew up with both parents, both grandparents, extended family in a three-bedroom home, which is pretty, you know, normal for New York. We had what was considered a mother-daughter home, so like in Georgia, how you would have a home and there's, you know, a level like that everyone's on, then you have a basement and maybe you'll have like, you know, some people down there too. That's how a mother-daughter home was. The only difference is in New York, you can't access it from inside. You had to come outside. So that was a very long-winded way of explaining how my housing situation growing up. But there is relevance to it later on in the story. I grew up in a really big family. My parents, they probably weren't the best candidates for having such so many kids. Nevertheless, they did the best with what they had. With my grandparents living downstairs, I was very close with my grandmother. I spent much of my childhood hanging out with my grandma, watching 80s TV shows, Golden Girls, Different Strokes, 227, you know, and then I would go outside and play with the neighborhood kids. So in a lot of ways, my childhood was normal, but in a lot of ways, it was not very normal. Like many families whose parents drink and occasionally use drugs, some less than desirable suspects would come over. As the youngest child and as a girl, that put me in a vulnerable position, and that opened me up to situations where I did have to endure some forms of abuse, both by these strangers and family members alike. And the shame and guilt that came along with that was something that I would have to continue to work through the rest of my life, and some of the reasons why I drank and used drugs as I did. Of course, vision is 20/20 in hindsight, but I do believe that those early circumstances were some of the things that caused that feeling of fear, really. Fear of being around others and just fear of strangers and family alike. I had my first taste of alcohol when I was 8 years old. My mom used to drink bottles and James. I don't know, for those like back in the day, tall, like iridescent green bottles that were like so, like I just as a kid, I was like, whoa, those look really fancy. And all the adults would be outside on the stoop and they'd be drinking. And, you know, I was like, oh, here's my opportunity to, you know, try what they're trying. And even though I didn't feel like, oh, drunk or whatever, I did have this feeling of independence and feeling like I was grown up. And I really liked that feeling. That made my first interaction with alcohol a positive one, because I really liked the way that it made me feel, which was like a grown up, an adult who can kind of take care of herself and protect herself. And so that is something that I'll always remember. I would escape the situations that I went through upstairs by going downstairs with my grandma, and I spent a lot of time with her. That's where I felt the most safe. And when I turned 12 years old, I learned that my family was, we were getting ready to relocate from Queens, New York, to Peachtree City, Georgia in 1991. So for those of you who aren't familiar with the South Side of Atlanta 30 years ago, it was very different from how it is today. And for a New York girl, who sounded like a female version of Joe Pesci, entering the school system in Fayette County was not an easy transition for me. I would go through some of the hardest culture shock, and it was terrible. I mean, here I am already grappling with these feelings of guilt and shame, and now I had these feelings of not belonging because I was very different. The girls in the South, y'all mature a lot faster than the girls up north. Let me tell you, I was fair-skinned, red-headed, freckle-faced. I was a kid, and the girls, that they didn't look like me, and it made me feel just not a part of. And all these feelings, they were bubbling up inside of me, and I wanted to escape. And there had to be, you know, a solution to this. But, of course, as a child, I really didn't know what to do. I had all these negative feelings, and then I just kind of grin and bared it, went through middle school, and then entered high school. And I was starting to lose my accent a little bit by high school. Like by the age of 15, I was starting to get a little more acclimated to the South. But I hated it here. I hated school. I hated everything about living in the South. Everything that was so, I mean, there was no public transportation. I'm like, everything closes at 10 o'clock at night. Like, this is insane. So I was really unhappy. I wanted to feel, the only place I felt safe was with my grandma, and she came with us when we relocated. So, like I said, I was not a good student ever. And when I was in high school, at the age of 15, almost 16, I got into a heated argument with the principal. Heated argument as in I got thrown out of high school for assault and battery, and I was sent to Fayette County Alternative School, and so I would have to go to the alternative school for 1 year and get as much credit as possible and then be able to hopefully re-enter a different school system, because Fayette County wasn't going to take me back. So I was actually really happy about this because I didn't want to go to high school anyway. And so to celebrate, I went down to the University of West Georgia with some older kids, and that's where I got my first drinking underage charge. So I was arrested for consumption underage, or minor in possession of alcohol, at the University of West Georgia. My parents had to come and get me. I was a juvenile, so it was pretty much just a fine, slap on the wrist. But a few months later, I turned 17, and I was arrested again for consumption underage. I didn't really go to alternative school. I mean, I was enrolled, but I didn't go, and so I didn't get high school credit, needless to say, I just told my parents, look, you guys have GEDs, I'm going to go back to school and get my GED later. And they were just, I mean, I was the youngest of six. All my siblings had gotten in trouble when we moved to the South. And I think they were just tired, quite frankly. So they just kind of threw their hands up and they were like, okay, you know what? If you stay at home, take care of your grandmother, you know, study for your GED somewhere in there, work a little part-time job, that will suffice. So from the age of 16 to 19, I'm already arrested twice, staying at home, caring for my grandmother, who was bedridden at this time. And what I would do is I would smoke marijuana. I'd smoke a joint in the morning, tend to my grandma, make breakfast, watch TV shows, all kinds of TV shows with my grandma, get ready for work, come home, get drunk, pass out, do it all over again. I did that from 16 to 19. And this is really where my disease started to take off, because even though I was really young, it was this routine that I didn't know how not to do. It's where I didn't feel those really bad feelings that I had, the shame, the guilt, the not belonging, feeling different. And so for those 3 years, I mean, I didn't get a lot accomplished, but I definitely didn't feel anything. And then one day after work, I got drunk, passed out, and my grandma, she would call me in the middle of the night, and usually it was like one of those, where's the remote control, which was always right by the right of her, like to the right of her, so she could put on the TV before like I rolled out of bed and stuff. I remember she called me, and I was like, I'm too freaking drunk, I'm not, I'll just get her in the morning, and I passed out. And the next morning, it was July 31st, I woke up, and I walked in her room, and there was something amiss, because she didn't look up at me with those bright eyes and wish me good morning like she always did. And I went to her, I touched her cold hand, and she was gone. And so was I. So from there, I knew something had to change, but I wasn't ready to do anything different other than make some circumstances or make some changes, but, I mean, I didn't really have a solution yet. I forgot one arrest. Did I say three? Two. Oh, so there's three. So when I was 18, like a year later, I had just gotten off probation when I was 17. I got arrested again for possession of a fraudulent ID. Guess what I was trying to buy? And so that was my third arrest. So I couldn't drive, needless to say. I had a suspended license. Actually, my license was suspended while it was suspended. And so I couldn't drive for a really long time. I think I was 20 when I got my license. And so I was kind of stuck, right? But I had to do something. So at 19, I finally went in. I think I opened the GED book, like a couple pages of it, went in, took my GED, earned my GED, and from there I was off to the races. I was like, wow, I'm really smart. And so I was like, if you could read a couple pages of a, you know, GED book, like, this is very promising. And so I had like this new, like, profound sense of confidence that, you know, I can start kind of making some changes in my life. So from there, I enrolled in the technical college, Griffin Technical College, and for the next 4.5 years, I would dedicate to earning my 2-year associate's degree. And I was very proud of myself. And so I earned that associate's degree in early child care and education. And from there, I decided that I'm going to continue my educational endeavors because I'm on a roll here, right? Everybody's like super proud of me. They're like, wow, Allison, you've really changed your life around. Although I was drinking all the time, I was still smoking pot, drinking alcohol. I wasn't doing anything different other than reading a little bit in between, taking a test, and getting a piece of paper. That was the only difference. And so from there, I went ahead and enrolled in at Kennesaw State University. I got into KSU, and I would dedicate the next 7.5 years to earning my bachelor's degree in communications and public relations. I'm a slow learner. But I got it. Shoot. I mean, I had a lot of fun in college. And so, or what I perceived as fun. I would take classes around my drinking, and I learned that as long as I was studying halfway and going to class and drinking and partying my tail off, that, you know, I was still being somewhat successful. And so I would get away with a lot. And I did get away with a lot. But I would continue this pattern of drinking incessantly for about 10 years. And then when, in 2007, I earned my bachelor's degree, and, in 2007, if you guys remember, that's when, like, the banking industry, like, went kaputz, and people were losing their homes, and, I mean, the economy was just, we were in a recession, right? It was not a good time to graduate college. And I hit a bottom, I mean, because all of a sudden, all that studying, all that everything, it just stopped. There were no jobs, and I had to move back home with my parents. I felt like such a loser. I felt completely defeated, and that everything that I worked for was all in vain, because it was the end of the world, as I saw it. So, I hit an emotional bottom where I couldn't take it anymore. And I remember when it was either the second or third time I was on probation, I was court ordered to AA meetings, and I went to a couple, and I knew there was a solution. I just didn't, like, I heard there was a solution, and I didn't know a lot about it because I never really paid attention. But I knew that people would drink or were alcoholic, and they would go to AA, and they would get better. So in 2007, I decided to walk into the rooms of AA. I picked up my first white chip in 2007, and when they say that the manifestations of this program can happen quickly or slowly, they happen very quickly for me. I guess God knows I'm really impatient, because within the first 90 days of me being sober, I got a call from the U.S. Department of Treasury. I wasn't in trouble, but they told me, well, they were hiring for people in bank supervision, and I was like, do they know who they just called? But nevertheless, they called me, and the next week I was on a plane flying out to Washington, D.C., getting clearance. I have no idea, like, to this day, how the hell I got clearance, but I did. It's kind of scary, guys. And so so there I was, and I got my first, like, big girl job out of college, and with just 3 months of sobriety. And to say I finally felt like I made it, I was like, thank God, I got my own apartment, and Did I have a car? I did have a car then. And I was, I just felt like, finally, it's happening. And so I worked that job for about a year. And then I decided that I didn't want to do it anymore and that I was going to go back to school and get my graduate degree. And I wanted to be a school teacher because I love school so much. And so I went back to school. I got my master's in education. And I completed my student teaching. You know, whenever you enter a teaching program, you have to teach for free for a year. And so they had this international program. And so I entered it, and I taught in South America for a year. And I had a little over a year of sobriety. I figured this would be a great opportunity for me to have a really good, like a really just rewarding experience and learn Spanish and learn all about this culture and, oh, it's going to be wonderful. So I went, and lo and behold, I picked up a drink. That's where I picked up, and I only caused one international incident. Won't get into that too much, but I came back to the U.S. My parents were like, "Yeah, you got to come back." And so I came back, and I wasn't. I mean, the progression of my disease. I mean, from the time that I was drinking, like, and using. From 16 to 19, yeah, it was pretty bad. But when my 20s and 30s, like, it was just, it was really, really bad as far as the repercussions, the hangovers, the, you know, the phone calls the next day of, oh, my God, did that, why? Like, you're a train wreck. Like, it got worse and worse over the years, is what I'm trying to say. When I came back from South America, I wasn't ready to sober up, and I wanted to live at the beach. So I took out a map, and I started in Florida, first county, Duval County, which is Jacksonville. Didn't get very far. I got a call from a middle school in Jacksonville, and I got hired on the spot. And I probably should have done a little research into what that school was like. It was a failing school. But, boy, what a great school for a really active alcoholic to teach in. Because these kids, they loved me. And I loved them, too. They were my caliber of kid. I mean, that's all I can say. They called me, if you ever saw the movie with Cameron Diaz, Bad Teacher. Yeah, so they called me Bad Teacher. There were days where I would teach my heart out. I mean, I and they listened. It was weird. They'd be taking notes. I'm like, okay. And then, like, the next day, I'd be so hungover, I'd have the lights off, and I would be like, okay, we're just going to kick it old school today. And I would play, like, Warren G, Master P. I was just like, other artists who you should not be playing during the school day. But I couldn't do it. I mean, they'd be like, oh, she's hungover. I'm like, shut up. But nevertheless, like, they knew when to flip it on and flip it off, and they were they meant a lot to me, and I still pray for them today and hope that our paths cross at some point. But amazing kids, and I'll never forget. I went to, this is one of my last drinking. Drunk a lot, if you will, in Jacksonville, Florida, because this is what led me to my next white chip. I was at a happy hour with a bunch of teachers, and happy hour is like when normal people, I don't know, if like you've been to like a regular happy hour, like this was new for me. Like people have like two drinks, one drink, and then they leave. Losers. And so So I went to this happy hour, and after that, I don't remember what happened because I was a blackout drinker. I would wake up all kinds of places, and I woke up in my roommate's convertible in the McDonald's drive-thru. And I was just like, what the heck is this? And she was like, I just remember the look at her. And she's like, oh, my God, you're alive. And I was like, and I would say that a lot. I would wake up a lot of mornings and say, oh, my God, I'm still alive. And I would always pray, God, just, I'll never do it again. That was like my life. And I'll never forget, we got back to the apartment. I got so sick all over the apartment. I woke up in the bathroom the next day. Now, the next day was a school day, but it was a teacher work day. And teacher work days are just days that you could totally blow off. So I blew it off. And so they were giving, you must be a teacher. And so they were giving out these awards. They would give out this quarterly award for a Master Teacher Award. And it was the fourth quarter, and lo and behold, guess who the Master Teacher was? She was cleaning up her own vomit in the bathroom. That would have been me. And at that moment, I felt like such a phony. And I was just like, yeah, I got to get out of here. So I started applying back to positions in Gwinnett County or in Georgia, got a teaching job in Gwinnett County, and that's where I found my home group, my first home group at Easy Does It in Lawrenceville, Georgia. And I picked up a white chip there. I got a sponsor. I worked with her. I worked through steps 1 through 4. Stopped at 4, but still went to meetings, was connected with the group, got a little disconnected with my sponsor, and would you believe it, I relapsed. And I was out for about 2 years, and I came back, and I went out again, came back. And I would continue to do this multiple times. I probably have more white chips than I have yearly chips. But I knew there was a solution. I just was never ready to take the step seriously because I knew how I felt. I felt guilty, shameful, like I didn't belong, like I was different from everyone else, and that no one would ever love me. And through working the steps, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned that that's not true. The feelings were true, but digging a little deeper and understanding why and my part, oh my God, my part, really? Just being honest, that wasn't really something I knew how to be because I never wanted to face myself because of all the bad things that happened to me when I was younger. In my 20s and 30s, I put myself in a lot of situations that there's no one to blame really but myself. But today I can forgive myself. I learned that I can forgive myself and move forward and hopefully learn a lesson. Probably relapsed a couple times in between there, but on November 1st, 2023, that's when I picked up my most recent, and I really hope my last, white chip. I picked it up here at Napa. I Can't, We Can, that is my home group, and my lovely home group represented in that second row there. So I came back in. I came back in for a couple reasons. My mom was dying. She was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer, and she was given 2 weeks to live. I had a lot of issues, just family issues. Caught a case like with my sister because, you know, she wanted to be a little rowdy and, you know, how to handle that. And then some things like, you know, would happen, and it just, my life was just getting really crazy because I know now, and I don't work the steps, and I don't look at myself honestly and look at my part, I tend to get in a lot of trouble. So, by the grace of God, I was welcomed into the fellowship and the love of AA. I can honestly say that today I have really meaningful relationships with people, and they're not superficial. They, you know, people accept me for who I am. I've learned how to work through some of the trauma, both through therapy, because therapy can be helpful, I feel like. And so I went through a lot of therapy to go through some of the things that were really hard for me to go through. And then I coupled it with the 12 steps. And the whole reason why I'm here today, I mean, all the therapy in the world couldn't get me to stop drinking. I mean, I tried. The only thing that taught me how not to drink was Alcoholics Anonymous. So when I look at the 12 steps, and when I look at my experience, strength, and hope as it relates to my recovery from alcoholism, I look at the 12 steps, and I can just pretty much summarize why steps 1 and 2, how they present themselves in my life, and it's the whole reason why I come to meetings. Because I'm reminded through your stories that life becomes pretty unmanageable when we drink. And that's something that going to meetings reminds me of. And when I share my experience with you, and when you share your experience with me, I'm reminded of that. The third step prayer, every day. I don't have it memorized, but I do have one prayer memorized, and I say it all the time. The fourth step I learned, it's not a one and done kind of situation. I didn't know that. It took me like, I don't know how many white chips to realize that the 12 steps, you got to go through them throughout your life. No one just said that. Or maybe someone did and I just didn't hear it. But I learned that, you know, steps 4, 5, all the steps. I mean, when we live them every day, maybe, you know, you don't have to sit there and write them all out like I wrote this whole experience. It's as simple as when I say something that I didn't mean to say, I can quickly say, oh, that wasn't the right thing. I'm really sorry. Just realizing that that's my part. I never learned from, like, my environment or whatever, like that's the way you're supposed to, you know, be. So in essence, the 12 steps kind of taught me how you're supposed to relate to other people. Somewhere in my development, I missed that. One of the reasons why I'm so grateful to AA is that it taught me how I'm supposed to behave myself. Because Lord knows I couldn't drink like a lady. I was getting nowhere fast. And I don't think that I would ever be able to be the person who I am today without Alcoholics Anonymous. So where am I today? I am more than 2 years sober. Yay! And, you know, it only took me a couple decades, right? But I got there. It's not, you know, again, not a fast learner. But my life today is a lot better than what it was when I was out there drinking and just doing whatever I wanted to do. God's will was never a part of my life. And now today, I can honestly say, your will be done and not my own, and mean it. Because to my own vices, I'm not really good at making the best decisions. And so I'm in a better position today. a lot of the legal stuff and just some of that other stuff that I had going on in sobriety just recently has come, like, has settled down and everything's okay. And that's just a testament of how things work themselves out for the best when you do the next right thing. That's what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope that my story was something that could help your sobriety in some way, and it wasn't too crazy. But thank you for the opportunity to be here, and God bless you all.
First I slip, and then I clip to a hope-filled dream. You rescue me, and finally, waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's been falling in. Takes me where the promise is, all in. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, God walks by, we walk eternally. Look into love's window for a heart. Take me where the promise.